Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, marking 47 years of commitment to operating the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com.
Welcome to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Paul Twardot. This episode of Outdoor Explorer features stories told at Alaska Trails Trail Tales event held in April 2025 at the Anchorage Museum. Betty and Hans Arnett share their story of a repeated attempt to complete the Crow Pass crossing started when Betty was in her 70s. Pete Panneris tells about a bear encounter in the Eagle River Visitor Center and what he learned. Nita Taylor thought he had lost his dog off the north side of O'Malley Peak and ended up being surprised. And finally, Mike Bruce tells a story of an exciting run where he got caught between a moose and a bear. Stay tuned for Outdoor Explorer. Welcome to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Paul Twardot. This episode of Outdoor Explorer features stories told at Alaska Trails Trail Tales event held in April 2025 at the Anchorage Museum. Betty and Hans Arnett share their story of a repeated attempt to complete the Crow Pass crossing started when Betty was in her 70s.
First story is actually a double. I'm going to read both of their bios. We've got Betty Arnett first. Betty is a retired Anchorage school teacher who took up hiking in middle age. She was one of the founders of the Hillside Hikers and Bikers 38 years ago. She also lifts weights every Wednesday morning as a member of Strong Women, sponsored by St. John United Methodist Church. Family members regularly walk and ride the South Central Alaska Trails with Betty. She is the author of two books written about her experience as a young house mother to 11 little boys at the Jesse Lee home in Seward in 1952 to 1954. The books are called 22 and The Mother of 11 and will be on sale today in the lobby at intermission. Betty has been active in community theater and storytelling. At one time, she was the president of the Storytellers Guild of Anchorage. Don't be surprised if you see 95-year-old Betty on her e-bike on the Anchorage trails this summer. And then along with Betty, we have Hans Arnett. Hans was born and raised in Anchorage. One of his earliest memories is of a hike with his family on Flattop Mountain before the founding of Chugach State Park. The family stopped short of the summit on that outing, but the brief experience in the alpine tundra of the Chugach Mountains made a huge impression on him that day, and he was hooked. He has been skiing, hiking, and biking in the Chugach since he was a kid, and has never lost his enthusiasm for getting outdoors. However, after decades of recreating outdoors in Alaska, he's found that he's become much less tolerant of crappy gear, bad snow, and big alder patches. After retiring a few years ago from a career as a surface water hydrologist, Hans has been taking advantage of his free time to travel and to get outside, hiking, running, skiing, snowshoeing, and biking with his wife, Nicole. He is also trying to catch up on his reading. Please welcome Hans and Betty.
Hi, I'm Betty, and I bet that I am the oldest hiker or biker in the house tonight. Well, I say that because I'm about to have a birthday. It's going to be next week, and it'll be on April the 25th. And I will turn 95 years old. I'm proud of it.
Hi, I'm Hans. I'm Betty's son. I don't really like to brag about my age, but I don't mind bragging about my mom and her outdoor accomplishments. She's still out there hiking and biking and getting after it. Last September, she climbed Flat Top up the Sunnyside Trail with my wife and I. And then last November, we went to Tucson and we did a week-long bike trip. And we were averaging 20 miles a day.
Well, I haven't always been a jock. No, I started when I was 56 years old. a couple of my friends and I, we took our 3-speed bikes down to Juneau, and we put them on the Alaska ferry system. And within 9 or 10 days, we had seen a great deal of Southeast Alaska, and oh, it was such fun. It was so much fun that when we got back up here to Anchorage, well, we didn't want to quit. And so we just scheduled biking every Friday and hiking every Tuesday. Now, there were other people who saw how much fun we were having, and so they wanted to join us.
So they formed a group called the Hillside Hikers and Bikers. And I know that there's a number of members of that group here in the audience tonight. The group is comprised of about 70 women, and they've got a waiting list to get in.
That's true. Well, see, what else can I tell you?
Well, what do you guys talk about when you're out on the trails?
Oh, well, we talked about a lot of things. I know. Well, we talked about backpacking at one point, and boy, my ears just really lit up because I always wanted to do that, but who would I feel comfortable with that could keep me safe doing something like that?
So, when Betty retired from kindergarten teaching at the age of 65, she came to me and she said she wanted to start backpacking, and she asked me for my help. And because I figured only a very bad son would try to discourage his mother from becoming a backpacker at 65, I said, okay. Now, the first trip we did was the Resurrection Pass Trail between Hope and Cooper Landing. And after that trip, we did an annual summer backpacking trip for the following 15 years. Now, early on in Betty's backpacking career, she said to me, "Hans, we have got to do Crow Pass." And my response was, "Do we though?" Because I was familiar with the trail, and I was very concerned about wading across Eagle River with Betty. We'd never done any major river crossings on any of our trips. And I knew what that one was like. It's wide, the river's braided there. So you've got to wade with your backpack across something like 3 channels. And the water's really super cold. It's silty, so you can't see the bottom, and your feet feel like blocks of wood. And the water flows pretty fast. And water that could be, say, up to hip deep on me. Well, imagine that depth of water on my 4'11" mom. I just saw so many ways it could go terribly, terribly wrong.
Well, he never shared any of that. So I didn't have any reservations in my head at all. And so I was ready to go anytime.
So I said, okay, let's do it. And so began our long and sometimes painful history with the Crow Pass Trail. Our first failed attempt was in 2003 or 2004, when Betty was still in her early 70s, and that turned out to be a very wet year.
Oh yeah, it was a terrible rainy summer, but we noticed that Fairbanks had beautiful weather. So we just got in the car and we drove up to Fairbanks, and we did that trail called the Granite Tours Trail. And it opens up into a high mountain meadow, and here are all these granite rocks coming up out of the ground. It looks otherworldly. It kind of reminded me of Stonehenge.
I was so relieved that we didn't have to do Crow Pass. And the Granite Tours Trail was a great pivot. We did other trips after that, but I knew that Betty still wanted to do Crow Pass. And so in 2008, when she was 78 years old, we made our second failed attempt. And this time we failed much more spectacularly. The summer turned out to be extremely rainy once again.
Well, is this when we were the
when the entire week for the rain.
Oh yeah. Well, we were getting tired of waiting for the rain to quit. And finally I just said to him, "Come on, Hans, we can take a little rain. Let's do this. We're Alaskans. We can handle this."
So my dad gave us a ride to the trailhead, and there had been a thunderstorm just before we started out on the trip. And 15 minutes up the trail, Betty slips on a smooth, wet rock, and she goes face down right in the middle of the trail. Mm-hmm. Now, I could tell she'd done something to her leg. She was limping slightly, but we didn't know how bad it was. But still, I could tell she's not 100%. And I knew if she isn't 100%, there's no way we're going to be able to do that trail. But, you know, psychologically, it's very difficult to pull the plug on a backpacking trip that you just started 15 minutes
ago. Okay. Well, and there was a young couple coming down the trail, and boy, were they wet. They were really rained on. But they had a car, and they invited us to ride in their car. They'd give us a lift, back to that bake shop at Alyeska.
Yes, the Alyeska bake shop, where we had just finished having dinner with my father 1 hour ago. Betty had taken off her muddy rain gear, and we're sitting outside the bake shop. We're clean, we're dry, we're not even sweaty. We've got our backpacks there waiting for a ride. We have to endure all of these questions from people passing by. Hey, where are you guys going backpacking? Or hey, what trail are you guys backpacking on? Which, it was awkward for us, of course, because our trip was already over.
Well, I took my phone out of my pack, and I called my husband, who was, of course, in Anchorage. He had just arrived from having, from having taken us down earlier in the day to the the head of the trail. And I explained to him what happened. And he just got right back in that car, and he drove down to Alyeska to get us and took us straight to the hospital. And yeah, I had broken my leg.
That was the shortest backpacking trip that the two of us ever took. But, you know, time passed. Betty healed. We did a different trail the next year. But I know she still wanted to do Crow Pass. And in 2010, at 80 years old, I was even more concerned about having to wade across Eagle River with her. And I shared this dilemma with some friends of mine at a dinner party. And my friend Mel, and Mel's actually here with her mom tonight. Our moms are buddies. Mel said, "Hans, why don't you just use a pack raft?" Now, for any of you who don't know what a pack raft is, it's a small, light, inflatable raft that you can fold up and put in a backpack. And when Mel suggested that, I thought, that's brilliant. At last, I have a plan for getting Betty across Eagle River without worrying about killing her. So what we would do is we would go upstream of the normal crossing to Glacier Lake, which is about a mile up valley. And Eagle River proper starts at the outlet of Glacier Lake. And I'd been there before. I knew what it was like. If there's deep water there, it's smooth and it's slow, and it would be so easy to pack raft across there. So I bought a pack raft, and then I did a safety class, and then Betty and I got our backpacks and the pack raft, and we went to Goose Lake to practice.
And he blew up that boat, and we took it out into Goose Lake. Didn't take us long to see that that boat wasn't big enough for two people. and 2 backpacks. I mean, it wasn't even big enough for 1 person and 2 backpacks. So that just let us know that once we got up high on that trail and arrived at that body of water he's been telling you about, that meant that he was going to have to make 3 trips to get both of us and all of our gear across the water.
Which I figured was no big deal. I mean, it's just time. I don't have to worry about my mom drowning. So we made try 3.
You are listening to Outdoor Explorer and Alaska Public Media. Brendan and Hans Arnett are telling their story about hiking Crow Pass Trail at the Alaska Trails Trail Tales event in April of 2025.
And the first day, well, I was familiar with the first part of that trail. And so nothing happened really of much interest until we got to the top up there at Crystal Lake where they have that cabin. And then it just poured down rain. And we were just so glad that we had the forethought to rent that cabin for the night. And so we knew then that we were going to be nice and dry the first night out on this trip, and we were.
That next day went pretty well. We just had one scary bit, and that was crossing a really steep snowfield above Raven Creek. But it was a long day. It was probably the longest day of backpacking that we had ever done. So we always practice what we call the 45-15 rule on these Betty backpacking trips. And so for every hour you're on the trail, you hike for 45 minutes, then you take a 15-minute break, almost without exception. And by the time we got to Glacier Lake, we'd been on the trail for about 13 hours. And we were pretty tired. But it was a gorgeous night, about 11 p.m., gorgeous summer evening. And to me, Glacier Lake has got to be one of the prettiest places in Chugach State Park. So after we set up camp, I figured, hey, I'm going to blow up the pack raft and go for a midnight paddle. And Betty wasn't too hot on that idea.
And I said to him, huh, aren't you tired? I am dead tired. Well, I couldn't believe it. He wanted to leave me inside that tent all by myself while he went off playing in the water with that boat. Oh, what kind of son is that?
Hey, I'll tell you what kind. The kind who's been lugging a dang pack raft and a paddle and a life vest in his backpack for the last 2 days. And Glacier Lake was just too appealing. So I blew up the pack raft, I paddled across the lake, I got out, I climbed up a little moraine. It was fantastic. It was just beautiful. And when I got back to camp about 1:30 in the morning or so, Betty was still awake.
Well, of course I was still awake. How could I sleep? My gosh. Well, I knew there were bears out there sniffing all around, looking for that one lone mom who had been left behind while her son was off playing in the water.
Well, anyway, nothing bad happened. Nobody got eaten. And that next morning, we had breakfast on the beach of the lake there in the sunshine. And then after breakfast, I rode the pack raft over to just below the outlet of Glacier Lake to the spot that we wanted to cross. And that was probably about a half a mile away. And as I was paddling over there, I saw on the far shore a very large black bear walking along the bank down valley. I didn't think that much about it because, I mean, it's the Eagle River Valley, right? So it's just crawling with bears. So I pulled the pack raft out, and then I start back to camp on this very well-developed system of animal trails. Unusually well-developed animal trails. And I'm about halfway back, and I hear some crunching off to the side, and I look, and about 30 or 40 feet away, there's this huge, furry brown bear butt slowly moving away from me. I figure moving away is good, right? So I go the other direction, I go back into camp. We break down camp, we get on our packs, and then we go back to the river on that same collection of animal trails. I never told my mom about the two bears. Well, I mean, not until a couple of years later.
Well, we got packed up and went to where he had the boat parked. And I just happened to glance up and look across the river, and lo and behold, there was a huge black bear. Oh, he was a giant, and he was staring at us just as strongly as we were staring at it. Well, we just decided then and there we might as well take a break. And we did. And we just sat in the sunshine there and nibbled on a little bit of food. And it took about 45 minutes, and Hans decided, the bear's probably gone on, so let's go. So he goes first, and he takes my pack, puts it in the boat, and goes over there. Then he comes back for me, and then when he lets me off, oh my goodness, I look down. And I am standing in the footprints of that big black bear. Well, that was rather unnerving, but especially as I watched him going after his backpack. But he was back pretty soon, and everything was fine. So we were okay. And
well, I should note that before I took Betty's backpack across the river and left her alone, I made sure she had her bear spray handy in case the brown bear I hadn't really told her about were to come back. And then after I dropped her off on the other side, and before I went back to get my pack, I made sure she had the bear spray again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, when he came back, we let the air out of that boat and then we packed it up, put it in his pack. Now, we've got to find the trail. And we don't know where it is, certainly isn't there. So we just go cross country, down that, along that river, and we go and we go and we go. And finally, we get down there where just about everybody who hikes that trail goes across the river, and there is that wonderful trail.
So everything was going pretty good. We had good weather. We had a reasonably early start. We found the trail without much trouble. Where we were headed was the Heritage Falls campsite, which is probably about 7 or 8 miles down valley from Glacier Lake. And we got to within about a mile of Heritage Falls, and we got to Icicle Creek, where the bridge was washed out. And Icicle Creek was just absolutely roaring. Now, at the normal crossing site, the creek's not that wide. Maybe it's about 30 feet across. But the water was so deep and it was flowing so fast that alders along both banks were being pulled down into the flow. And it was just wall-to-wall sweepers on both sides. I mean, it just looked murderous. If you fell in, you'd get pulled into those alders, you get pulled under, you'd be done. So someone had cut down a cottonwood and felled it across the creek to serve as a temporary bridge, and water is flowing over the top of the cottonwood. And not only that, but the bark has washed off the top of the cottonwood. And if you can imagine how smooth the wood of a cottonwood is under the bark, well, that's what water is flowing over. So a nylon rope had been tied between two ropes above the cottonwood for a safety line. And whoever put that up was apparently a giant, because the rope was 8 feet up in the air above the cottonwood, and I could just barely reach it.
And if he could just barely reach it, there was no way that I could reach it. Well, neither one of us wanted to go across that cottonwood. So what we did was go up and down, both up and down along that creek, looking for a safer place to cross. We were hoping to find a more shallow place, and then we'd just wade across. No, we couldn't find any safe place, so what to do?
Yeah, we were stuck. We were going to have to go across the cottonwood.
Well, I watched as Hans reached up, got hold of that nylon rope, and he very carefully walked across with his pack. And when he got over there, he took that pack off and just left it. And then he came back for my pack, put that on, and did the same thing. And now that both packs are on the other side, he's coming for me. And he asked when he reaches me, "Are you ready?" And I said, "Well, I guess."
So I stood facing Betty, holding the rope in one hand, and then we grabbed each other's right forearms. And I was holding her as tight as I could without crushing her arm. And then I would back up a few steps. She'd come towards me a few steps. I'd back up. She'd come forward. This whole time, water is splashing over our boots. Now, I don't know what would have happened if Betty had slipped and gone into the creek. I'm not sure I could have pulled her out with just holding her by one arm, the other arm on a rope, standing on top of a wet log. It was one of the scariest things I've ever done in my life.
But we made it. Oh, we were so happy. And we hugged each other. And we just laughed for joy.
I'm not the kind of person that uses words like jubilant or euphoric, but we were jubilant, we were euphoric. It was such a thrill, such a relief. And after we calmed down, we put our packs back on, and then we headed into Heritage Falls, and we set up camp. And that night it rained. We didn't even care. You know, we slept in the next day, had a casual morning, late breakfast, packed up, and headed for the Eagle River Nature Center. And my recollection is that after having dealt with Icicle Creek the day before, that last day on the trail was pretty much just a cakewalk.
A cakewalk? Heavens, no. There was nothing about that trail that was a cakewalk. We haven't even told you about our last day when we had to climb over a high cliff. And why? Because flooded trail.
Yeah, the cliff thing, I think that was a little above a place called The Perch, but I just didn't think it was that big of a deal, because I knew Betty could do it. She just needed a little help.
A little help? Let me tell you. Hans has never given me anything but a tremendous amount of help on any of the trails that we have shared. And because he's taken such good care of me, I can now say to you that I am still a happy, healthy hiker and biker at the age of 95.
That was Betty and Hans Arnett, and concludes the first half of our show featuring stories from Trail Tales. We'll be back with more stories after this break.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer. I'm Tobin Shelby, the show's producer. Before we get back to more stories from the trail, we'd like to take a short detour and remember the life of a different type of outdoor adventurer, an opossum who gained notoriety after hitching a ride to Alaska from Washington State. According to the Alaska Zoo, Grubby, known as Ophelia to zoo staff, died on October 11th from complications of old age. Tristan Thone is the zoo's executive director and helped rehome the stowaway to the Alaska Zoo.
I think we saw an opportunity not only to give her a second chance, but to also educate people. So I think it was an easy decision for us. The zoo exists to provide a home for animals in need, and that's what she was.
Grubby was 3.5 years old when she died, surpassing a normal lifespan for the species by over a year. She was found in a shipping container that arrived in Homer in March 2023. Opossums don't live in Alaska. Grubby was considered invasive. The marsupial was eventually taken into custody by the Homer Police Department. She then became a resident at the Alaska Zoo. Some people wanted her killed when she came to Homer, but others were fans and launched the hashtag #FreeGrubby on social media. Allison Phillips used to live in Alaska, but now lives in Maryland. She learned about the bandit through a social media post from the Homer Police Department. Phillips says she often sees opossums run over on the side of the road where she lives, but she's glad that wasn't Grubby's outcome.
It was just so cool that that was her outcome. Like, her outcome wasn't they found her frostbitten in Homer. Her outcome was she had fans and she was loved by the staff at the zoo.
Grubby was named after Grubstake Avenue in Homer. That story was first reported for Alaska Public Media by Ava White. Now back to Paul Twardock for the rest of Outdoor Explorer.
Welcome back to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Paul Twardock. We are listening to stories from Alaska Trails Trail Tales event at the Anchorage Museum. Next up is Pete Panneries, former state park employee, mountaineer, and volunteer at the Eagle River Nature Center.
Pete and his wife, Sue, arrived in Alaska in 1972. He was in the Army and trained extensively on the Aklutna Glacier. After leaving the service, Pete was hired as a Chugach State Park ranger in the fall of 1976. He retired in 2004 as Chief of Field Operations of Alaska State Parks. Pete's a super user of Chugach State Park, board member of the Friends of the Eagle River Nature Center, past chair of the Alaska Mountain Rescue Group, and can count more than a dozen adventures in the Alaska Range 5 on Denali. Pete will be telling a tale of how 40 years ago, he had a close call with a bear near the Eagle River Nature Center. Please welcome Pete.
Thank you, Diane, for a great presentation. This is a full house, folks. I count at least 150 people in here. And I'm a little intimidated to talk to such a vast crowd. So I'm going to read one simple thing to you. Experience is something you don't get until just after you need it. 1983, my wife Sue and I and our four-year-old daughter Raina are hiking out of the Eagle River Visitor Center at the time on the Crow Pass Trail, heading out to camp on the gravel bars of Eagle River. And we're hiking out the trail, and I've got a brand new low rucksack on, one of those green ones, and Sue's carrying this great big Kelty frame pack, and rain is bouncing between us. And we're just having a wonderful evening. It's beautiful, and people are coming and going, and with dogs here and there, and we hit four corners, and we take a right and head out to the river. And as we get to the river, I start heading downstream, and Sue's not far behind me, and I'm looking, Dad's looking for a place to set the tent up. Young family going camping. And I take my pack off and I put it down and I wander downstream. And I look up and there's a brown bear crossing perpendicular to where I'm walking. And it looks at me and it's probably is in the back row distance from me. And it comes sprinting right at me. Here it comes. Oh my God. So here I am. Well, in 1976, as was mentioned, I started working with the state parks as a Chugach State Park Ranger. And during that time, I had a great career. It was a wonderful time. I got to talk to thousands of people. And in the early days, in 1976, there wasn't no bear spray. There wasn't no air horns. We weren't in the digital age. There was no GPS or any of that. It was you walked on the ground, and that's the way it was. But over time, I got to talk to lots of people. And one question frequently came up, and that was, well, Ranger, what's the best gear or the best gun to have for personal safety in bear country? And that was a strange question, because I saw a lot of articles about it and talked to lots of people, and it emerged that having a firearm would be something that could be a lot of different calibers, a lot of different bullets, and all of that stuff. But it had to be in your hands. You had to be carrying it at port arms. So that struck me. And I ran into this article by good fortune that I read through that was in Field and Stream. And the author laid out all this ballistic stuff about guns, but it always equaled 15 more pounds that you were going to have to carry. And that was something that was never really attractive to most folks. But the author suggested there's another thing you can do. you can take your time to make sure that your presence is known to the bears that might be out there in your way or other wildlife that could be on your way if you're hiking a place such as Crow Pass or wherever. So I took that to heart. And here's some of the things that came out of that is bears, if they see you in the wild, have a very good, they just might start running at you just to see what you are, to push it, to see if you're prey or what you might be. They might stand up to look at you and appear threatening, but they're just checking you out. Those are things that might happen first. But the ultimate concern is getting too close to a bear and you pop up and it doesn't know you're there. So that's what the article was, that attracted me most about what they had to say. It was like, you need to make noise because the bear you surprise is the one that's gonna hurt you. The bear that is 100 yards away might actually start running towards you, but it'll stop if you take the time to say, hey bear, I'm over here, right here. It is an active thing. It isn't take a picture, or start taking a video, or pull your gun out and aim it at you. That's not what you do. It's take the time to let them know. So over the course of time, incidents come up. We get reports, and we find out that complacency by us, the hikers, is the number one thing that gets us into problems. In other words, you're hiking. You've been hiking for hours. You're not talking to anybody. There's nothing around, and you go silent. You're very stealthy. Here you go, you're just walking through, and you're making no noise. And you come around the corner, and you see the butt of a brown bear. Well, that's danger close, and then you could get hurt, most likely. And that's the type of thing that we've got to be very aware of. So time goes by, and you hear about these incidents of people getting in trouble. It seems to be like my friend's walking down the trail with his dog and his wife, and they're not making any noise to maybe see that bear at a distance, but the cub's right there when he comes around the corner, and of course he wound up in the hospital because mom was right there with him. Bang, down he went. So here I am in 1983, and here comes this bear, and it's coming right at me. Sue's behind me a few feet, and she witnessed the whole thing. But I'm all about, hey bear, he's coming right at me. I mean, I go, oh, yeah, here he is. And then I bend at the waist. Hey bear, hats off, hey bear. And by the grace of God, he put the brakes on right there in front of me. Comes up and grapples, moving in front of him. And it takes off running in the opposite direction, defecating as it went. So Sue tells me, Pete, I saw that, and so I was wondering, what the hell are you doing? You're doing jumping jacks with your hat off. What's going on? And then she saw the bear. And I looked over my shoulder to see as the incident unfolded, and Sue had taken our daughter. It was face down on her with the pack between her and if the bear had kept coming, but it didn't. It took off. As soon as it figured out that, oh, this is a human, I don't want anything to do with him, it was gone. Well, we spent a fitful night that night. Any branch that cracked was the bear coming to get us. The next morning, I got up and went out to where the tracks were. It was very clear that something hit the brakes right there and followed it by a few patches of scat. And then the tracks were about the size of my hand, could easily follow them, came across tracks that were three times that size, right inside. There was another very big bear out there at the same time. So experience taught me to never camp on a gravel bar at Eagle River.
That was Pete Panneris, former chief of field operations for Alaska State Parks. Next, we have Neely Taylor telling us an epic dog story.
So, another story about a dog. At any rate, my dog, Lucas, was just a totally wonderful dog, and he was my first dog, and I was totally devoted to him. All of this happened in March and April of 1985, quite a while ago. At any rate, to start, one day my wife and I decided to climb O'Malley Peak, which is just up on the skyline above Anchorage here. And we started at the Glen Alps trailhead and took the trail up to Hidden Lake, and we took Lucas with us, of course. And Lucas was having just a great time, sniffing, doing what dogs do. And we proceeded from Hidden Lake on up to the summit of O'Malley. It's a good day, good conditions. And when we got almost to the summit, or right at the summit, Summit Ridge there, there was no Lucas. Lucas had vanished, and we, after looking for him and calling and so forth, I found his tracks, and I followed his tracks right up to the edge of the Summit Ridge, and he had walked out on an overhanging cornice, and the cornice had broken off, and he had fallen to his presumed death. At any rate, we were able, after a while, to look down, and there was a small ledge about 100 feet down or more, I'm not sure of the distance, and the cornice had fallen on that, and there was a big pile of snow. And then there's an avalanche on below that, all the way down to the flatter area, which I think is called the ballpark. I had a rope, and I had the gear that I could have rappelled down to that ledge and looked for him. But I was very, very unsure of my ability to get back up the rope, because I hadn't done that. And so with terrible guilt and awful feeling, kept looking, no sign of Lucas, only presumed he was on that ledge, and but decided to abandon him. And so we got back to the Glen Alps trailhead after dark, and all of this was on a Saturday at the end of March. The next day was a Sunday, and I am not a frequent churchgoer, but I occasionally go to church. And I had been to the St. Mark's Lutheran Church on Lake Otis for a wedding not long before. And so my wife and I, we went to St. Mark's kind of as a way of mourning for Lucas. At some point in the service, it was a busy day, full congregation. At some point, they have prayer requests. And there are quite a few requests, and you know, the requests are for things like people having cancer, or you know, a family member has just died. But I heard the pastor saying, any more requests? Any more requests? This is your last chance. So, feeling a little shy or awkward, nevertheless, I got up and I said, you know, that I wanted a prayer for my dog, Lucas, who had been killed in an avalanche the day before. So there I am on my feet in a congregation full of people I didn't know. And the pastor says, could you please repeat your request? So there was no backing out at that point. There I was on my feet. So I did repeat the request. And the pastor did say a prayer for my wife and I, for you know, our mourning, for our distress, but also a little bit of a prayer for Lucas. And you know, at that point, you know, the congregation says, hear our prayer, and that was that. That was a Sunday. 5 days later, on Friday, I got a call from a mountain climbing friend, a veterinarian, saying, you know, Neely, we got a call. Are you missing Lucas? And I said, yeah, I mean, he was killed in an avalanche last week. Well, someone has Lucas, and here's a phone number, and Lucas was alive. And so I went and got Lucas and took him immediately to the vet. Lucas was badly hurt. He was a big gash over his top of his face. He had two broken ribs, collapsed lung, broken tooth. He was emaciated and in really, really bad shape. But he was alive. I told all my friends that story, and one of them asked me, you know, Neely, do you mind if I tell a newspaper reporter about this? I have a friend who works for the Anchorage Times. Now, back in those days, this is 1985, we didn't have personal computers, no internet, none of that. And I see a lot of gray hair out here. And I think, you know what I'm talking about. We got our news from the newspaper, not from social media and all of that, and also TV. But at any rate, so the next day I get a call from a newspaper reporter and from the Times and asked me a few questions. And then there was a little while later, a second call and some more questions. And then, another call, do you have a picture of Lucas? Well, no, but, can we take a picture of Lucas? And I said, sure, come on over to my office. He's with me now. Your dog is with you at your office? Well, I have a provision in my lease. They allow it here. And so anyway, photographer comes over and takes a picture. And then the prop. You get next day, Mutt cheats death. That's not the end of the story. AP, that's Associated Press, printed that story all over America. I call from my cousin in Miami saying, hey, Neely, I'm reading about you and your dog, Lucas, on the front page. Same thing, my aunt in Connecticut, and one also in Colorado. And just a little more of this story, and then we're done. Lucas started getting mail. And not too many, but maybe six or seven letters. Somehow they got my home address and sent letters to Lucas. And my favorite of those letters was one that said, dear Lucas, we're cats. Ordinarily, we don't like dogs. But Lucas sounds pretty cool, and we hope to get better.
Last up from Alaska Trail's April Trail Tale event is Mike Bruce. Mike's story is about a simple run in the woods, complicated by a moose, its calf, and a bear.
In the year 2000, I moved up here to Alaska with my family, with my wife and my two young kids. And I took a job with the Centers for Disease Control, working on the Alaska Native Medical Center campus. And at lunchtime, I would occasionally go out for a run at Bicentennial Park. And 9 months after arriving here in Alaska, it was May of 2001, I was heading off to go for a run on the trails. I ran over the pedestrian bridge over Tudor and was heading south on the trails in Bicentennial Park. And I was about a mile and a half to 2 miles into my run. I was running on gravel and I had a dense forest off to my right-hand side. And remember, I'm a chechako. I haven't even lived in Alaska for a year yet, so I don't really know what I'm doing. And I'm running along and I start hearing this crashing and bashing sound to my right, and I'm trying to figure out what could possibly make so much noise in the forest. And I'm looking over at the sound and I'm thinking, this sounds like a freight train is coming, and it's coming right at me. And it dawns on me, well, maybe I shouldn't be here. And the moment that thought hit me, a mother moose and her baby come tearing out of the forest with the fear of death in their eyes and go running down the trail heading in the southerly direction. And there's some red streaks on the back of the baby. And so I come out of my slow-mo mode and realize that, wait a minute, the sound is still going. And I look to my right and there's still crashing and bashing coming in my direction out of the forest. So I think, oh my God, this has got to be a bear. And so I start yelling at the top of my lungs, in that direction, and all of a sudden the sound stops. At that point, I turn, the sound was coming from the northerly direction, so I turn south and start running as fast as I can down the trail, going south. And within a minute or two, well, I show up on the back end of a mother moose and a baby moose. So I'm running on the bicentennial trails right behind a mother moose and a baby moose. And believe me, it dawns on me, it's like, this could look kind of bad for me here. And I imagine the ADN title of the paper, the headline saying, "Idiot Chichaco gets stomped to death on bicentennial trails running behind a mother moose and a baby." So I was aware that this was not maybe the most intelligent thing to do, but I wanted desperately to get away from what I thought was the sound of a bear. So I'm running along behind mother moose and baby, and all of a sudden the mother moose stops and turns and looks at me like I have been the cause of all of her problems. I am why she's running, and what am I doing? She gets her ears back, she puts her head down, and she comes right at me. So now I turn and I run back in the northerly direction on Bicentennial Trail, and I'm now heading back in the direction I do not want to go, towards what I think is a bear, but I never saw a bear. And so I'm running, she followed me and stayed fairly close behind me, and but it wasn't so close that I had to dart into the trees, you know, for my life. But eventually she eases off, and I look back at the trail, and there she is on the trail just staring me down with her ears back. So I can't go in the southerly direction, I have to go north. So I turn and I head back north, and I'm running and I'm thinking, well, you know, maybe it wasn't a bear. Maybe it was just an accident. I don't know what that was. And then I'm rationalizing and saying, well, if it was a bear, it probably ran off in the forest. It's not there anymore. So I run. I get to the spot where the initial encounter was, no bear. So I breathe a sigh of relief. I run a little bit further, and I go across the bridge. I head up to the left on a curve that has a blind curve at the top. And when I go around the curve at the top, I see in front of me about 15 to 20 feet away, a brown bear on all fours, just staring me down. And so I'm looking at the brown bear, trying not to look like prey, and trying also not to be too threatening, standing up as tall as I can, spreading my arms out, lowering my voice, doing my best Johnny Cash, talking to that bear. And I thought to myself, what do I have on me? I've got a pair of running shoes, a pair of shorts, a t-shirt, and I have a little pocket in my shorts, and in my pocket was my CDC ID badge. And I grabbed that ID badge and I held it at the bear and I said, you don't want to mess with me, I work for the CDC. And I was holding my badge out thinking, this looks crazy. But I was scared to death, and this bear is just staring at me with this malevolent look. And I'm trying to keep staring at it, and I thought it was all over. And the thing that struck me the most when I'm standing there so close to a bear kind of out in the wild was how big its head was. I know we're all Alaskans, but this thing's head was it was that big around. And I remember thinking, if this thing wants to attack me, I stand no chance whatsoever. And then it reared up on its hind legs. I'm 6'7", and I was looking up at it. And I thought, this is it. My life flashed before my eyes. The bear stuck its nose up into the air and took a sniff, and it didn't like the smell of me. And it takes off into the forest really quickly, sort of heading off in the northerly direction. So now I turn and run as fast as I can. I'm in a full sprint going back in the southerly direction on the trail, going as fast as I possibly can. And I go tearing down the trail around the right, down the hill. I get to the bottom and I look up and I see the bridge up in front of me. And what do I see between me and the bridge? I see a very large animal and it has a big rack. It's a bull moose. I just ran by that bridge. How is this possible? I am freaking out about the bear. So I'm running towards the bull moose and I am screaming at the bull moose, out of the way, get out of the way. It's getting agitated. But I'm sprinting right at it, and it moves off the trail and goes down into Campbell Creek, and I run across the bridge. And as I'm running across the bridge, I look down at Campbell Creek, And there's that agitated moose, and he's running right parallel to me. And I realized, if I don't get to the other side of this bridge before the moose does, I'm going to be stuck between an agitated bull moose and the bear right back there. And I can't have that. So I kicked it into a higher gear, just got to the other side of the bridge before the bull moose, but this bull moose was agitated. He was right on my back. I could feel him breathing and hear him snorting. And I had to dart into the trees a number of times because he was mad. And I get back on the trail and he chased me again. And I did that two or three times. Eventually I get far enough along that he lets go and I get away from him. I'm on the trail. I'm just kind of shattered in a state of sort of semi-shock that I could have this many wildlife encounters all at once. A 45-minute run has turned into a two-hour ordeal. And it took me, for years, I couldn't go back out onto that trail. I just couldn't do it. I was just too traumatized. But I did eventually get back out onto the trail. And I guess my advice to you all would be to maybe not go out for a run on the trails of Bicentennial Park in late May, early June, when all the mother moose are dropping their babies. That maybe wasn't the smartest thing to do, but to definitely get out on the trails and enjoy our great wilderness. So thanks very much.
Thanks to Alaska Trails and their speakers for sharing their stories. Check out the Trail Tale event by going to this episode's page on the Outdoor Explorer website, where there's a link to the Alaska Trails website. Also, thanks to our producer, Tobin Shelby, with additional help from Amon Swenson. I'm your host, Paul Torduck, and from all the hosts of Outdoor Explorer, enjoy a trail near you, and we'll see you outdoors.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and in your favorite podcast app. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.